Here we go. Here we go. Thank you for listening to Stoop Kids, a Hey Arnold podcast. I will just say apologies in advance. I'm going to be trying out some new hosting tactics this episode, and I may come off a little gruff. That being said, if I don't receive the results that I know I can get from my pals here, then we are going to be doing a whole lot of push-ups. But until that time comes, I'm Cody Narveson, and you can find me on Twitter at Cody_BH.
Cody, have you ever considered using psychology in order to unlock our potentiality? I'm Harry Mackin, and you can find me on Twitter at Shiitake Harry.
And I'm Emily. You can find me on Instagram at Emily Sui.
Psychology, here we come. Good thought. Another good thought also with us today is the ghost of our super producer. That's Four-Eyed Jason Daphnis. He's alive. He's not a ghost, but you can find the ghost of his online presence on Twitter at Nintendoofus. You can also keep up with the podcast on Twitter and Instagram at StoopKidsPod. That's kids with a Zia. Oh, mamma mia. On the menu today is episode 23, the first half of which is, of course, called Coach Wittenberg. Original air date, January 22nd, 1997. The Wikipedia-sanctioned episode summary is as follows. Arnold and his friends get Coach Wittenberg, voiced by guest star Jim Belushi, shoutouts, to be their new bowling coach. But all he does is yell and make them do push-ups. It's learned that Helga's bowling team is coached by Tish Wittenberg, voiced by guest star Kathy Moriarty, perhaps best known for the movie Raging Bull. Again, shoutouts. And she is Coach Wittenberg's ex-wife, who he later remarries in the episode Best Man. So not to telegraph too much, but stay tuned for that conversation that we'll have in the future at some point. The conversation we're having right now is about episode, again, 23A. The fine folks who made that episode possible. We've got Jamie Mitchell back supervising the direction. We've got Stark Howell and Larry Leaklighter co-directing the episode. And the lone writing credit for this episode goes to Jonathan Greenberg, whom, fittingly enough, we last saw in episode 11A, which was Benchwarmer, Coach Wittenberg's sort of introductory episode. But that's more than enough for me. I will kick this over to Emily Sui. Emily, what did you think about this episode?
Yeah, well, thank you for asking, Cody. I think this is a pretty fun episode overall. We see the kids and a different group of kids than we've seen hanging out before, with Rhonda, Eugene, Arnold, Gerald, and then who am I forgetting? Harold. So I guess it kind of mixes it up a little bit with who is hanging out, and they're all at the bowling alley for pretty much the whole episode. So that is a cool switcheroo there, too. I think Coach Wittenberg, his performance is great. He's pretty funny throughout the episode. And Arnold teaches him the lesson of how to, like, coach the team better. and, you know, so that's nice to see. I don't understand where Arnold's wisdom comes from sometimes, but that's fun. And then, yeah, I think it's a good episode to learn about, like, what makes a great coach and what it's like to be a part of a team and how your own skill set and strengths and stuff can come into play to help the overall group. But yeah, I think there are also some missed opportunities, though, which, like, I feel like there could have been more bowling puns. I, like, expected more bowling puns out of them. And I really was hoping for some Strained Beats animation at the end. So just when Eugene is throwing the ball to win the game. But yeah, overall, a fun episode, a good one that teaches a pretty overt lesson through Arnold to the coach. But one that's it's really fun to watch.
I would agree with that. All of that, honestly, very fun to watch. I especially like that you noted that they were pretty much almost entirely confined to the bowling alley for this episode. That was sort of a thorn in my side coming out of the like the flower shop episode. It's like, why would they go back to school? So yeah, I like that they kind of committed to that setting here. Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up. Harry, how did Coach Wittenberg and this episode as a whole sit with you?
Yeah, thanks, Cody. I think Emily characterized it really well. I'm a really huge fan of Coach Wittenberg as a character. I really like Jim Belushi's performance and kind of Jim Belushi in general. I think he's a little bit underrated because he kind of is overshadowed by his brother. But I think he's really, really funny in these. And like you can see why he was brought back. I love his characterization as this coach who is constantly trying to use big vocabulary words and construct complex sentences, but he doesn't have the actual sort of vocabulary or understanding of those sentences to pull it off. That seems like something that really happened to somebody, and like somebody who really had a coach like that and is writing their experience. Like that's how it reads to me. And I think it feels so true to life and so real, right? Like Coach Wittenberg is such a realized character in that way. And he's so fun to watch, especially with Jim Belushi's performance. And then, yeah, I like Emily's, characterization of this being a Wise Arnold episode. I really love Arnold as a catalyst for that, as the sort of like moral center and counsel of the show. He's sort of the sounding board. I think that's a good role for him, and it's one that he returns to constantly, but it's good to see here. Specifically, I really like what this episode says about coaching, because it actually does make some substantive points that you had discussed, Cody, earlier, which is that Coach Wittenberg comes to learn not just that coaching means positive reinforcement, which is kind of what you think the episode is going to be, but specifically that finding the treating the people you're coaching as individuals in finding their unique strengths and bringing those unique strengths out of them and seeing how they collaborate with one another the way Emily noted. I think that's a really cool and pretty nuanced message characteristically to Arnold, right? Like they're never just going to say something like, well, it's better when coaches are nice or when coaches are supportive rather than critical. They're going to make a more sort of nuanced and poignant statement about it, right? And that's even a statement that sort of fits really comfortably into the Hey Arnold sort of ethos of exploring the sort of individuals and letting the things we know and love about these characters manifest and sort of like differentiate them. And this is a great character episode for that, right? Like we get to see Rhonda and we get to see Harold and Eugene, and we get to learn that Eugene's favorite food is strained beets, which is hilarious. And I also agree that there are a few missed opportunities, just maybe because I wanted more, but I love the third act twist that Tish has her own bowling team and that Helga's on it, right? Like that was such a great climax to this. I love that they went where Big Lebowski didn't and showed us the bowling tournament, right? But I would have liked to have seen more actual sort of coaching the individuals on Coach Wittenberg's team, right? Like that is the thesis statement and the overt message of this episode, is that understanding your players as individuals and bringing out their strengths is how you become a good coach. But we only really see him interact with Eugene, right? Like I would have really liked to have seen how he did that with Rhonda, or how he did it with Harold or Arnold and Gerald, right? That would have been a lot of fun to see, I feel like. And it would have coincided really well with the message. And instead we get an episode that, like a lot of Hey Arnold episodes, has very breakneck pacing, not in a bad way, but sort of in a way that maybe misses a few opportunities in the process of getting from point A to point B so quickly, I think. But what did you think, Cody?
Yeah, thanks, Harry. Both of you said a lot of great things and things that I felt myself gravitating toward as well. So that makes me feel really good kind of as we unfold this discussion a little bit more. Emily, kind of like you said, this is another episode that takes a look at a group of kids that like we would never really expect narratively, realistically, these five kids to be together on a bowling team. But it's cool that they did that. We're again, slowly but surely, and I feel like I say this often, especially lately, the last like 6 to 8 episodes, just like we're gradually learning more and more about the interiority of more characters, which is really cool. I gotta thumbs up Harry's comments about the Belush. He's hilarious. He has a lot of great readings. His for a character who says a lot of, like, it takes a special vocal talent to, like, trip over words and make it clear that that's intentional and make it funny and kind of sing in that way. And I, this episode, I really started to notably appreciate what Belushi is kind of bringing to this show. And yeah, there's a lot that I felt myself being drawn toward with the sort of like coaching angle of this episode. And I think kind of like what you were talking about, Harry, the fact that so much of this episode was about Coach Wittenberg's trials as a coach and how he can improve as a coach. Really, it was like that was the first half of the episode when we start to see him make great strides with kind of mostly Eugene, but the rest of them as well. And I was like, I found myself thinking, like, this could have been the whole episode. They could have, like, stretched this out. Like you said, give us more time with each of these sort of, like, with these interactions. You know, this kid with Coach Wittenberg, this kid with Coach Wittenberg, let those develop a little bit more. It was really fun the way it kind of unfolded. So I no qualms there for me. But I guess if this is, well, I didn't come into this wanting to, like, say more things about, or like, you know, the learning about Cody episode, but yeah, the past 10 or so years I've been not just playing a version of real life Quidditch, which is that dumb Harry Potter game, but like having a lot of leadership.
Well, stop, it's awesome that you got it and you're very good at it. It's you don't have to stop demeaning yourself. Anyway, I'm sorry to interrupt you, please proceed.
Jason, you can cut that out in post, but not just playing, but having a lot of like leadership-y responsibilities that sort of started with like at the intramural level, we needed a captain and I raised my hand and volunteered and then just like kept putting my hand up, you know, and like I, you know, I never see myself as sort of a finished product. I'm always trying to learn new things, new ways to get through to people. And I guess sort of inevitably saw those things in this episode as well. The idea that anybody at any, like, you know, even someone as seasoned as Coach Wittenberg can change their approach, sort of old dog, in fact, being able to learn new tricks, just finding the right motivation for people, finding the right ways of communicating with people, because it is a two-way street. And just because you're like saying something to someone doesn't mean that it's coming through. It might, you know, you might need to integrate strained beats or something, or fashion to like really get through to people, because everybody learns differently and everybody responds to stimuli differently. Yeah, like if kind of like the Moneyball thing, shout outs to another movie that we're referencing kind of ham-fistedly, but like if something is working, the need to sort of, you know, stick to your convictions. We see at the end, Coach Wittenberg starts to question himself and his new approach, and he kind of falls back on his old routines and is the sort of classically romanticized problematic coaching approach, which is the sort of quote unquote tough love, the sort of tiptoeing the line between being a coach and being like an abusive sort of adult figure in a young kid's life through the lens of sport. And ultimately at the end, realizing that that's not the right approach to take, because the win-loss sort of binary that gets constructed very often through sports is an insufficient view of like what sports do for kids and livelihoods and adults too, right? Like that's ultimately what we land on here. Like it's more than just winning and losing. Coach Wittenberg did win in this case, but in the last sort of scene of the episode, we see him get the more important victory at the end of it all with the two coaches kind of reconvening very nicely. That was a really sweet scene. Anyway, I've said a lot. Harry, what you got?
Yeah, thanks. No, you said a lot of really great stuff and actually kind of unlocked an aspect of this episode that maybe I had overlooked before, which is that there's also, to use sort of Emily's sort of lens, there's a very anti-authoritarian reading to this episode, right? Because like the traditional sort of drill sergeant approach to coaching is very much like the coach knows best. The coach is the one that is teaching. You will learn from the coach and therefore be successful. And that is also the win-lose binary, right? The win-lose binary becomes if you listen to the coach, if you follow his instructions appropriately, he is a good coach and you win. Or he is a bad coach and you don't win, right? It becomes all about the coach. And so when Arnold breaks down that win-lose binary and says that winning isn't the most important thing. It's about actually how you coach and how you help your players develop as people and as players. At the same time, that's what coaching is. And when Coach Wittenberg sees that, that's also something that that Arnold is himself doing for Coach Wittenberg. And it's breaking down not just the binaries, but also that that authoritarian hierarchy, right? And I think it's really cool and really refreshing to see an episode where an adult can learn from a child, and in not in a demeaning way, right? Like Coach Wittenberg is obviously played for comedy, but he's not a loser, or his arc out of this is out of being a loser, and he learns it through Arnold, and that's not demeaned, right? Like that nobody looks down on him for that. And in fact, like at the end of the episode, when he completes his arc and he says, like, you guys are the best, because he realizes that coaching is about the team, not him. That's what sort of like gets him. That's what reminds him of his relationship parallels and what allows him to win back Tish, the other coach on the team. And so like there's a really good message at the core here, not just about sort of coaching and not just about what it means to sort of like be part of a team the way Emily said, which is a great point, but also just sort of like this idea that really being part of a team means learning from each other in every sense, like on the field and off. And it means that nobody is better than one another, that you're all teammates, right? So like this is a pretty great episode about what it means to be a team, I think, in a really real sense, that I think that you talking about that coaching really sort of unlocked for me. And I think it's there, and I think it works really well here.
I think it does too. The way, kind of what you were describing, the way that sort of translates in my brain and kind of how I've approached my own teams the past handful of non-pandemic years is this, like, the idea that, like, this team belongs to all of us here. Like, everybody should have a say, and, like, any points of leadership. Again, this is an anti-authoritarian podcast with pretty anti-authoritarian people. But, you know, if I need to be the, if, you know, myself and anybody that I'm sort of running things with need to be like the pushers of a certain agenda, be that as it may, but like it's an agenda that we should all like have a say in and agree upon together, because like we're all putting time and money into this. Obviously, that dynamic is on paper a little different in this episode, because it's very, you know, Arnold and the rest of these people, like they're kids. The Wittenbergs are grownups, so the power dynamics are completely different. But at the same time, the fact that the show does, you know, lean on seeing Arnold as that, like you two kind of characterize the sort of wise, character, the person providing wisdom for these people, the fact that kind of, textually we're inclined to see Arnold like that anyway, that sort of, brings him and Wittenberg closer together and makes that sort of an easier read. Streamlines that avenue to, like, I don't know, make that message more clear, right? Like, this is Arnold's team as much as it is Coach Wittenberg's team, as much as it is Eugene's team, etc. So yeah, I think that came through. It could have been a lot worse, but the fact that the show is what it is, I think makes that work a whole lot better.
Yeah, I had one more comment and then sort of a question for the class. But first, my comment, I guess, is I think that like Hey Arnold is such a uniquely good show for making a point like that, like you just made, Cody, about how like everyone on a team is an important part of that team. And like, because to me, the sort of like the idea of team sports, the thing that's really appealing about them is they're like a vector for understanding and valuing people better, right? Because you can appreciate other people's differences and strengths and weaknesses and idiosyncrasies when you have this sort of very direct lens to view them through, right? Like this common point of comparison that you can put people into and sort of understand through the different ways that they approach or think about the sports a little bit more about them. And it's a really good way to understand and value people, right? And I really like that aspect of sport. And I think that that's something that makes a lot of sense here, especially because Hey Arnold is already a show about that, right? Like these characters are substituted in episode over episode, and their different approaches are how we come to understand their characterizations and understand, like, why, say, Harold was chosen for this episode and why, say, Phoebe was chosen for this episode, right? And, like, the show itself is enhanced and continuously, or as Coach Wittenberg would say, repetitively enhanced by our growing understanding of these people in these new contexts. And that's kind of what the sport thing is all about. And then I guess my question is, while we're on the subject, have you all ever had really good coaches or really bad coaches? Do you have any coach stories? I don't think we've done coach stories before, but I'm fascinated by it.
I can go first, Emily, if you need time to think about it. But I've been very fortunate to have a lot of great coaches, shouting out Benchwarmer, a previous episode we did where I touched on it a little bit, but a lot of the coaches' kids were people that I was also great friends with at that time in my life. I find myself very fortunate. I think about now, like, how that could have gone if I had more coaches with more sort of like toxic outlooks of athletics or coaching or things like that. And I'm very glad that I had the sort of upbringing and luck that I had growing up. In high school, tennis was my sport. And so that's, I guess, just like an easy example of a coach who, I guess, I don't know if we'll use names. I won't use names for this. I don't think it matters too much either way. But it was enough of a tough love sort of approach, but it wasn't anything problematic or anything that turn people away from the team or something like that. The first week of our tennis season would always be like, we would rarely pick up a racket. It would just be like a week of conditioning. And then it would just be like, hey, like, this sucks, but if you can make it past this, then like, you can, like, the rest of the season is going to be cake for you, you know, like that sort of thing. And like that, I credit those sorts of weeks of intense, I went to high school in the state of Minnesota, and the tennis season started up in late March. So it was often like running through snow or slush or things like that, which only added to the fun. But the sort of mental fortitude you get from like pushing yourself through a workout, again, not like overly doing so that you reach a certain breaking point, but like that sort of toughness that you get layers added upon over time, like it pays dividends in future workouts. It pays dividends for any sort of time in your life when you need mental stamina. A recent example, I was waiting in line at the DMV. You know, that's its own sort of mental fortitude. I don't know. It's I'm kind of rambling at this point, but I don't know. He's someone I appreciated his approach. We were like a top team in the state, and he had every reason to be more aggressive or, you know, abusive in that sort of coachy way. And he never really was. And I think about him every so often, especially when I'm working out or doing my own sports, which I will not, degrade, or Harry will get mad. So shout outs, you're out there somewhere. Enough about me. Emily, coaching stories, what you got?
Yeah, well, I've talked at length about the basketball coach I had, who was my, like you're mentioning, Cody, the star player on the team. One of my best friends on the team, it was her dad who was our coach for basketball in middle school. But besides that, I also had a coach who was my social studies teacher. So that was unique, I guess, as far as like, I don't know what I learned apart from just like being able to see a teacher in, you know, out of context, you know, more as a person and away from just the classroom. So that was helpful. And I became more of like a friend, like we were friendlier as far as coaching and teachers and students go. Like, it was a nice friendly dynamic. But yeah, Harry, what about you for as far as coaches go?
Oh, wow. I didn't play very many team sports. I guess the big coach I had was, I was in Taekwondo as a a child.
Oh, hell yeah.
My main instructor was the son of the grandmaster who like brought Taekwondo to America in the 60s, or he was like one of the progenitors. And Master Lee was like, I think he still coaches. He might still coach Olympic level Taekwondo athletes, or he did at one time. Very, very intense individual, an extremely skilled martial artist, a little bit of a sadist. So I sort of have a bit of a rougher coach story, but he would often, I would say habitually, in fact, pair me up against other boys in the class who were much bigger and stronger than me and seemed to take some level of enjoyment out of watching me get my absolutely handed to me on a weekly or semi-weekly basis. Lots of kicks to the head, lots of kicks to the groin, things like that might explain a lot about who I am. However, I also had Master, I think he was known as Mr. He is now Master John, who was a different Taekwondo instructor, also at the same school. And he was much more sort of supportive and had a lot more sort of like fun with him. And I remember once he taught me how to do judo flips, and then he let me practice on him until I successfully flipped him over my shoulder into the floor, which felt very, very good. I don't know if he sort of like let it happen or if I did it right. It was a long time ago. I am no longer proficient at judo, unfortunately, or Taekwondo, but that was a memory that I still cherish. So that was nice.
Wow, that rules. I can't remember if I knew that about you or not. Do you remember what like level of belt you made it up to?
Yeah,
is that something, how those work?
I was a brown belt, which is 2 from black.
Dang, yeah, that's pretty high. I only made it to the orange belt level of Ryuku Kenpo. Shout out to my senseis. But anyways, we've learned a lot about each other this episode. Do either of you have any kind of stray thoughts as we wind this one down? Any shout outs, things like that?
Shout outs to the way Coach Wittenberg says tish. I really like that. I really like Jim Belushi's reading on that line.
Yeah, I'm thinking about all of his nicknames for the kids, which were pretty funny, apart from Harold's, which is a bit anti-fat, but as Porky was his nickname for Harold. But he called Rhonda Crazy Legs. He called Eugene Red a bunch, which was, I thought, pretty funny. And then he always calls Arnold Arnie. So, yeah, he's a great character overall. And I was just thinking, I wonder what he would nickname all the other kids who weren't a part of this specific Zyphers bowling team.
What a good question.
Would Stinky just be Stinky, or would he be like Popsicle Stick?
Popsicle Stick is pretty good.
That's a lot of syllables for a nickname, but you get it.
Gerald would probably just be Hair, right? He would probably just call Gerald Hair.
Oh yeah.
Let's see. I feel like he would probably just call Phoebe like Lil Missy or something. You know what I mean?
Oh, sure. Poindexter?
Lil Missy is probably like Curly, or he might
sure.
Four Eyes, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah, glasses or something.
Glasses, sure. Shades.
Specs. Yeah.
Specs is very good. It would probably be Specs, yeah. I think he's tough. What about Sid? Boots? Probably Boots.
Oh, Boots easily. Yeah. Shout out to Boots. Come on the pod. With that, I think we've just about reached the end of the 10th frame for this first half. I think that's how bowling works. It's been a while. We should go bowling. Anyways, don't touch that dial because we've got another half of this episode to get into after the break. So don't go anywhere. Welcome back to Stoop Kids, a Hey Arnold podcast. For those of you with your sylph scopes handy, I might recommend busting those out because we're talking ghosts today, kinda, in episode 23B, which, of course, is known as Four-Eyed Jack. Original air date, January 22nd, 1997. The Wikipedia-sanctioned episode summary is as follows. The ghost of a former boarding house resident is believed to have been causing strange occurrences when Arnold and Gerald find an old pair of glasses that they believe belonged to him. Kind of a mouthful, but short and sweet and concise, I guess. And once again, shouting out the fine folks who made this episode possible. Jamie Mitchell acting as supervising director for the episode. We've got George S. Shultis as well as Tuck Tucker co-directing the episode. And for writing credits, we've got a written by credit for Craig Bartlett. And then we've got a story credit going to Danica. Oh God, I had this perfectly in my head. Danica Ivankovic. One of those pronunciations is maybe halfway correct. But shout outs to Danica. This is her first kind of credited writing episode of Hey Arnold, kind of a banger, a good one to debut on. Maybe Harry will feel the same way. Maybe he won't. But in either case, he's getting the microphone first.
Hey, thanks. I was just reeling from the fact that you made a video game reference and you thought you just snuck it in there and you thought I wouldn't comment on it. But thank you for that reference. I appreciate it. I like this episode a whole lot. I just love sleepover episodes. I love scary story episodes. I love episodes that are single location, especially if that location is the boarding house. And so this hits a lot of notes that I just really, really dig. I love the dark, rainy sort of aesthetic of it. I love the suggestion. There's a very powerful, great energy to kids learning scary stories and letting their imaginations run away with them. This is sort of an episode about how a collective imagination can run away with you. That's really fun. It's so fun to get swept up in that. I love border episodes, right? So like, it's so great to see Oscar and Ernie and Mr. Wynn all get to be characterized in this way. And it's also a great grandpa episode, right? Like, I think that we get callbacks to Raspberry's grandpa's nemesis. We get to see his secret bathroom. We get to see his characterization on how he plays with Arnold, right? Where he's sort of like very lightly sort of benevolently teases and stokes Arnold's imagination because he values Arnold's imagination so much. There's a really great moment that's not dialogue where Gerald is being the sort of logical, level-headed young man that he is. He's disparaging the idea that they're going to go after this ghost. He says like, "Oh, there's no ghost. I don't believe in ghosts. This is silly." And Arnold goes, "But what if the reason I found these glasses was to give them back to that ghost?" And you can tell that grandpa told the story the way he did specifically to elicit that response from Arnold. And you can see right when he says that, the camera cuts to grandpa and his face just lights up because he knew that his grandson would have that reaction. And he got that out of Arnold and like created this fun experience for them to have. The lights were out in the boarding house or about to go out. And I just love that. Like, what a great little character touch and what a great little analysis of what makes that relationship so special. So I just think this is a really fun episode top to bottom.
Yeah, I am inclined to agree with that. Emily, what did you think about Four-Eyed Jack?
Yeah, this is an excellent one. I agree. I think it's neat to see more of an urban legend episode like this one, or a story that Grandpa is telling them, similar to like Haunted Train, where instead of just the kids taking on like this adventure, it's Arnold, Gerald, and then the boarders. So like, it's nice to see this different team set up. And I think overall too, this is a really fantastic, like, world building episode, just like the way that they set up everything in a spooky way. And the setting is so cool. They have like really nice animated dark, storm clouds that go across the night sky. And there's some like cooler xylophone music happening to like set the scene. And like siren noises. I took notes on all of the shots I was noticing, like, yeah, a lot of lightning, great overhead shots of the city. All of that like really helps create this fun episode and world for the kids and the boarders to play around with their like suspicions of what all these strange noises are in Sunset Arms. I think it's a great episode. And I especially love the shot of Grandpa after he tells the story to Arnold and Gerald about Four-Eyed Jack, and he's walking down the steps from Arnold's room, you see the lightning flash on him as he's turning around. So you see a skeleton outline on, like, as the lightning flashes across Grandpa. And then he cackles. He's like, be careful of those glasses, short man. And like, it's so well done. It's just a really awesome animated episode.
Yeah, this is, for me, this episode kind of fits into the category of episode that I remembered a lot of moments of, even if I like couldn't tell you what, like as I was watching it, they all just kind of came flooding back to me. And I started to think like, oh, I remember all of this episode, it turns out. Yeah, this is a real knockout of an ep, I think. Like Emily mentioned, I also thought of the Haunted Train episode, I guess, because lightly categorizing these episodes is kind of fun. The sort of episode that is influenced by the, like, the perspective that a grown-up gives, usually that is Grandpa, you know, him just sort of imprinting upon these children in a sort of dramatically ironic sort of kind of way. And like, that was really fun. This is an episode, I mean, it's gently poking at the sort of like spooky, scary kind of genre and having fun with it. We get some great music. We get some stuff that's like not quite a theremin, but it has the same kind of like tonal warbling going on. I think I heard that a couple of times. That really stood out to me. So like, we're playing with those. We're playing with like the shadows and the angles aren't like terrific, like Dutch angles or anything like that. They're not that exaggerated, but you know, we're kind of peeking around corners and things like that. And we're touching on, like Harry mentioned, this is a great border episode. We're lightly touching on character interiorities, but not too much. You know, like Four Eye Jack is sort of the stand in for this, like, to, you know, get real, you know what about it, like sort of a stand in for this fear that they all sort of fear, whether it is just like fear itself, and that kind of like manifests into different things for everybody. Ernie chalks it up to the unknown, which made me think of The Iron Giant, which I've watched a couple times in the last few months. And I don't know, like a lot of that sort of energy of just like, we're afraid of this, we're not quite sure what it is, but that's why it's so scary. It was nice to get that sort of experience with not just Arnold and Gerald, but the grown-ups as well, because as the show likes to remind us, grown-ups are as dumb as we are. So this was a great reminder of that.
Yeah, really well said, Cody. I wanted to home in, on the unknown specifically, right? And like, I think that that's a core component of what makes this episode so fun and special, because as we're sort of exploring the unknown, as Ernie calls it, and he says, like, that's what, it, who knows what could have happened to me. That's why they call it the unknown. I love that line. But we're also like, we spend this time learning about the borders and learning about what they have in common and how they have these relationships with one another. And ultimately the sort of over under of this is that the unknown doesn't have to be scary. It doesn't have to be perilous or terrifying, right? There's sort of a very My Neighbor Totoro-esque idea to this, that like, actually, like this exploration that we had in this sort of like secretly, you know, not according to Arnold, but according to Grandpa, safe place, it gave us an opportunity to discover. And so like, the unknown can also be this sort of benevolent and fun thing, right? Like, Arnold was able to produce out of nothing this very fun event for their sleepover with the help of Grandpa, right? And in the process, they got to learn about the borders and each other. And I think that that's really well served by just how sharp the writing is in this episode. I really want to shout out, just like, all of the borders are so well written here. Ernie calls his mallet the great equalizer and talks about the unknown with this like odd reverence that is so funny. Oscar makes a great appearance. Oscar and Susie, they're having one of their classic arguments. Apparently he keeps a horseshoe inside of his pants because that's a family tradition of his. That is so funny. It's just really great. Like, we get to see really great characterization arise out of all of these people. And it's all in the service of sort of that, that idea that like, actually learning about other people and learning about like the place where you live can be great. So I really like that.
Since you're mentioning Oscar, Kokoschka, and Susie, I wanted to bring up the fact that Susie throws a record at the wall at him, and he, and so a record breaks, which I think is a great symbol for Oscar, the character, who's a broken record of a character. Yeah, I don't know if that's intentional, but I thought that was funny.
That's awesome.
And also, just like, we're getting introduced to the Sunset Arms basement for the first time, so we've never been there before. I didn't know what it looked like. I couldn't remember this from watching this as a kid or anything, but what a cool basement. There's like stone arch doorways, and like there's weird test tubes, glass test tubes are all scattered around as if it's like Frankenstein kind of a setting, and like a cobblestone like floor. But then the secret bathroom that Grandpa's been hiding from everyone is like bright pink with bunny wallpaper and tons of magazines and marble sinks. It's like very nice and a lot different than the rest of the basement. So I thought that was funny.
And it has a chandelier.
Oh, yeah. It's so, what a wonderful, beautiful basement bathroom, considering it's where it is in the boarding house.
Yeah, that landlord is living like royalty with that fancy bathroom. Yeah, a lot of sort of like evergreen visual motifs to characters. Ernie with his hammer, Oscar with stuff being thrown at him, Grandpa walking out of a bathroom. Like, again, these characters at their best and most frequent. I guess, that reminds me, one note about I don't know why this stood out so much to me, and this is like a one-off thing, but when after Grandpa tells the story of Four-Eyed Jack, he leaves and his stomach gurgles, he leaves Arnold's bedroom rather, and he says, your grandma made raspberry cobbler tonight. And I'm just like, wouldn't they know that?
I think it's like a siren's call, right? Like, I think he loves raspberries, but he doesn't love what they don't love him, I guess.
Right. No, but I mean, like, I don't know. I don't know why it's such a thorn in my side, but just like, wouldn't Arnold and Gerald have been at supper and know that she served raspberry cobbler? It's just, I don't know. It's a nothing thing. And I guess the other side of that is, hey, Arnold and Gerald are getting milk and cookies as well. So a double dessert kind of night. So you love to see it. And they're sitting there reading the Purdy Boys.
They're good boys. They deserve as many desserts as they want.
Yeah.
I guess
yeah,
you never know if they maybe had dinner in Arnold's room and have just been reading the Purdy Boys that whole time. And who knows? They maybe been holed up there, though, since it's been storming all day, allegedly.
Yeah. And I guess like maybe sort of as like an underlying thing of this episode, the only other big thing I have, and it might not even be that big, but just like starting the episode on like a rainy night sleepover, there was a certain wave of nostalgia that came from that image specifically just like, hey, holding up in a friend's bedroom, we're just kind of doing whatever, we're separated off from the rest of the house, we're, you know, reading, eating treats, and, you know, eventually they went on to get into shenanigans that involved, you know, the rest of the boarding house as well, which is totally fine. But just like that image of like a rainy night in with friends was such a nice image that I can never get back to. So shout out to Craig Bartlett, you big jerk, for making me feel stuff.
Hey, never say never, man. You're welcome anytime. But I wanted to, you just said that you read during your sleepovers. You and your friends would.
They read. I never read. If I'm being perfectly honest, and I know this is sacrilegious and maybe like an 11th hour thing to bring up, that's really inconvenient, but I would play video games at sleepovers personally. Yeah.
That's what I was going to ask is like, I don't know growing up what I would have done on sleepovers had I not had video games. That's like all I ever did with any of my friends throughout childhood. So Emily, did you have sleepovers? And if so, what did you do at your sleepovers?
Yeah, we'd watch movies. That's what I mean. Or paint nails, or just you gossip mostly. That's what would happen.
Also, yes.
Yeah. But no video games at girls' sleepovers that I was at.
Damn. That's wild. The rumor, the legends are true.
Right.
Indeed they are. I guess on that note, any other shout outs that y'all have that are sleepover related, that are Hey Arnold related, that are Four-Eyed Jack related, etc. related?
This is an all-time Gerald episode as well. I think that his characterization with Arnold is really great. He has a great speech at the end about how he says, don't open that door, because if you open that door, one of us will be wrong. And what if it's me? And so I really love that. I have so many great favorite lines from this episode, right? Like, it's such an immediately memorable episode. There's a part where Grandpa goes, Arnold goes, are you trying to tell me the boarding house has been haunted? And Grandpa goes, no, that would be irresponsible. What I'm trying to say is, yes, the boarding house is haunted. It's so funny. His reading is so good. And it's just top to bottom like that. I think that there's so much good, sharp writing in this one. So this is like definitely a highly recommended episode.
And my one shout out is for Arnold and Gerald's cute pajamas and slippers. How adorable that they're kind of matching.
Man. Their drip is off the chain. Is that what the kids are saying? Don't read into that. They looked so nice and cozy in their haunted boarding house. All I have to say to that is, here's hoping that the strangest, most otherworldly experience to happen to you today, dear listener, is hearing this, this conversation of ours. Whether or not that's actually the case, I will just say thank you for listening to Stoop Kids, a Hey Arnold podcast. You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Stoop Kids Pod. That's kids with a Z. This episode was produced by super producer Jason Daphnis, and you can find him on Twitter at Nintendoofus. I've been Cody Narveson, and you can find me on Twitter at Cody_BH.
I've been Harry Mackin. You can find me on Twitter at Shiitake Harry.
And I'm Emily. You can find me on Instagram at Emily Sui.
And of course, remember, one pod is nothing to cheer about. One pod is pathetic. You're all pathetic, is what I would have said if I was a jerk.